So who loves kids? Or who doesn't love kids? They're great. Gotta love kids. We all love kids. They're really, really cute. And they have a wonderful propensity for saying a variety of amusing and unexpected things. But then they go and spoil it all. They grow up, they get their own lives, and they start to cultivate their own ideas. Well, Annie Coisen knows all about this because she raised her son in a secular household, but then he rebelled by turning somewhat religious. Here's Annie telling her story for The Moth.
So when my son Jonathan was little, he asked why he didn't have any brothers or sisters. And I said we didn't need any more kids because we got the one we wanted. Aww. And it was true. Every time Jono left for school, for camp, for college, I felt this heartbreaking sense of loss. Because your main instinct as a mother is to hold your child as close to you as possible. The problem is that your main job as a mother is to prepare your kids to separate. It's the cruel catch-22 of parenthood. Now, we brought Jonathan up as a secular Jew. After the Holocaust, my parents had turned away from the old beliefs. My immigrant mother used to say, "If there is a God, I don't like him." On Yom Kippur, while the rest of our Bronx neighborhood was all dressed up and going to temple, my mother and I would sneak downtown to see a Broadway musical. Because, and I say this with Jewish pride, Yom Kippur is the easiest day of the year to get theater tickets. So we were outsiders, okay? No Passover seders, no Purim parties, no Hanukkah menorahs, no nothing. And I brought my son up the same way. But when he turned 13, we thought he should have some kind of coming-of-age party. So we sent him for some lessons in Jewish culture, and we invited a bunch of friends over for lunch, and Jonathan read a paper called Jewish Values in the Modern World. And then I had this great idea. I got each guest to give Jonathan a list of their 10 favorite books and their 10 favorite movies so that he could grow up with his own personal liberal arts guide. And you have to understand, this is the way we do things in my crowd. When we get together for a party, we get creative. We do funny skits and original songs and, you know, satirical speeches. So this alternative bar mitzvah was just another offbeat party, and everybody loved it. Everybody except Jonathan. He hated it, and he accused us of being hippy-dippy cheapos. Why didn't I have a real bar mitzvah with a big party in a fancy restaurant? I would have gotten a lot of checks instead of those stupid lists. And I explained that we don't necessarily do everything that other people do. We make our own choices. Okay, so Jonathan grew into manhood, and we did become good friends. We have a lot in common. We both like comedy and ethnic food and Texas Hold'em, and we talk about books and movies, many from those stupid bar mitzvah lists. So I've got a good thing going here. And I don't want to mess it up. So when it comes to his personal life, I try to keep my opinions to myself, which I can assure you is a real challenge. Like he announces that he's going to go and work in London for a year, and I pretend that this is good news. "Oh, sweetheart, that sounds wonderful." And what I'm really thinking is, he's going to be looking the wrong way in traffic, get hit by a bus. He's going to get chronic bronchitis from that miserable climate. And he's going to learn to think of toast as a meal. The only good thing about working in England is that the Brits know jack about Jewish culture. So whenever Jono feels like coming to L.A. for a visit, he just makes up a holiday. Guys, I'm going to be out next week. I have to be with my parents for the first 5 nights of Kishka. Oh, yes, of course, Jonathan. Please accept our very best wishes for a wonderful Kishka. Now, when Jonathan comes home, he announces that he and his New York girlfriend, Elisa, have gotten engaged. And once again, I have to pretend that this is good news. Oh, sweetheart, how wonderful. This is a big fat lie. I'm going to tell you something. The fact is, I would be perfectly happy if my son stayed single forever. That way, I would remain the leading lady in his life. I wouldn't have to share him on holidays, and I wouldn't have to watch him making goo-goo eyes at some trollop. But there is this nasty rumor going around that I might die one day. And I don't want my child to be alone, so okay, I'm fine with this stupid marriage. Until the following week, when Jonathan calls and tells us the wedding plans. It is going to be a huge, traditional, black tie affair in New York when he moves back from London. And here we go again. Oh, sweetheart, that sounds wonderful. Oi. I take a Valium and get on the phone with the Yenta Brigade. Are they out of their minds? It's too big, it's too formal, and it's too Jewish. I mean, for starters, what is this black tie nonsense? We are not the kind of people who hang out in tuxes and evening gowns. And why is there such a huge guest list? People are not going to fly to Manhattan from all over the world for a glass of champagne and some chopped liver. And then one of my girlfriends says to me, now, Annie, try and remember, this is not your wedding. And this is absolutely true. My wedding was a totally different story. No engagement ring, no bridal shower, no gift registry. My husband, Benny, comes from Denmark. We met on a blind date in February, and we got married in April so he could get his green card. A lot of my friends were worried, and they said to me that it was insane to marry a total stranger. Well, that was 49 years ago. And there are still days when I believe my friends were right. Anyway, for our teeny tiny wedding, Benny and I managed to find a laid-back rabbi, Rabbi Lenny, who agreed not to mention God during the ceremony because, as I told you, I'm not a believer. Religion has too much blood on its hands. For me, being Jewish means simply honoring the time-honored practices of eating out, bargain shopping, and climate control. It's too hot, it's too cold. Where's that draft coming from? So the worst element for me in Jonathan's insane wedding plans is all this traditional Jewy stuff that his fiancée grew up with. A rabbi chanting prayers, a Hebrew marriage contract, and 100 baby blue yarmulkes purchased from underthechuppah.com. Meanwhile, things start to get frantic and expensive. I have to buy a gown. We have to fly to New York. Benny's huge Danish Jewish Gentile family is flying in from Copenhagen. We're going to have to take them for dinner. I figure we'll do Chinese as an introduction to Jewish American culture. And then things go from frantic to insane. Now, I want you to hear this carefully. Benny's brother is coming in with his two ex-wives, and they are all staying in the same room with one king-size bed. And now you know why the Danes are the happiest people in the world. I went to a wardrobe sale at a TV studio. I found a beaded gown that still had a $1,200 price tag on it. I got it for $20 and saved the price tag in case I want to resell it on eBay. Benny dug up his old tux from 1967, which still fit perfectly as long as he didn't try to button it. Much to my amazement, people actually did fly in from all over the world. Plus, I have to admit, everyone looked so beautiful in their fabulous evening clothes. And then this really strange and surprising thing happened. Rational, cynical me got a little shiver when Benny's very assimilated family put on yarmulkes for the first time in their lives. The ceremony began with four young men carrying the huppah, the wedding canopy, down to the front of the room. This canopy was very simply draped with Elisa's late father's prayer shawl. And again, I got this little shiver. Then the music changed and Elisa, the bride, entered. She was wearing her great-grandmother's lace wedding veil. And when my son looked at her, I felt that same heartbreaking feeling of loss that I used to feel when he went off to school, to camp, to college. Only this time, he wasn't coming back. He was marrying her and divorcing me. I had taught him to make his own choices, and he was choosing her traditions over mine. He was separating, and I guess that's the way it's supposed to be. Then, just like in Fiddler, Jonathan broke the glass. Everybody yelled, "Mazel tov!" And we all danced back up the aisle, and we kept dancing and singing and laughing and drinking and eating the whole night long. And all the things I worried about, the formal attire, the huge crowd, the Jewish stuff, turned out to be all the things I loved most about the wedding. I am so glad that I did a mother's job and kept my big mouth shut. Thank you.
Annie Koizin at one of the live storytelling events hosted by US radio show The Moth.